Hello and welcome to the Many Rules of Film Club. This is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at the Loft Cinema, and I'm very happy to be joined today by occasional filmmaker Heather Lares.
Hi, Jeff.
And multimedia artist Rusty Boulay Stevenson.
You better watch out.
Oh.
You better not shout.
I better not cry, and I'm telling you why, because it's Christmas time, and that leads us to our topic du jour, which is going to be offbeat Christmas films. I think we all know It's a Wonderful Life, which I have said before makes me drink copiously because it's very depressing.
Super depressing.
Yes. But it is sort of the classic standard Christmas film. So we're not really going to be talking about the standard classics here today.
No. Christmas Story is not in this episode.
No. Love it.
We do.
But it gets talked about a lot. So we're going to talk about some other films that we think are maybe a little off the radar for the holiday season and that maybe people would want to check out.
That's right.
Yeah. I thought maybe I would kind of get the ball rolling because I think my film that I wanted to talk about is maybe a little more specifically Christmas oriented.
Agreed.
It's about Christmas. So one film I really love, it's a relatively recent film. It's called Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale from 2010. And it's a Finnish film. It's from Finland by a director named Jalmari Hollander, who's from Helsinki. And I saw this movie when it came out. We played it at the Loft Cinema because it was sort of a weird Christmas movie. I didn't really know what to expect. And I ended up just falling in love with it. It's great, and a lot of people latched onto it. Sort of as a really weird, dark, offbeat, funny, kind of culty sort of Christmas film. So just in a nutshell, although it's kind of hard to talk too much about this film, but just in a nutshell, because I think possibly a lot of people have not seen this. So Rare Exports is a film that is a take on mythology of Christmas, the real Santa Claus, not as someone in the film refers to as the Coca-Cola Santa Claus, but the actual real scary, punishing. The Santa Claus who really is making the list and checking it twice and doling out punishment. And
Eek.
Yeah, eeks. So this is set in Finland in Lapland, and some American capitalists have come to this mountain to excavate what they think is, as it turns out, the real Santa Claus, because they want to bring it back to America and exploit this creature. And it turns out that the real Santa Claus is actually a gigantic horned monster encased in ice.
Nice.
Yes, it is nice. It's very nice. At the foot of the mountain is a reindeer farm run by a gentleman and his 10-year-old son, who is clearly patterned after Ralphie in A Christmas Story. This young boy truly believes that this real Santa Claus is the evil Santa Claus of yore, not the new Santa Claus. So the movie really sort of takes on Eastern European traditions of the original Santa Claus, the Krampus character that I think we're all terrified of now. But really, the original Santa Claus, the kind of monstrous Santa Claus. And so this Santa Claus is, in the film Rare Exports, is about to be reawakened by his elves, which are a horde of feral, elderly gentlemen with long white beards who are naked running through the fjords in Finland.
Which is quite a visual.
Yeah, it's what I think of when I think of Christmas.
Yes. Wielding hammers, I might add. And their job is to protect the giant Krampus Santa Claus because they're going to thaw this thing out. They're going to bring it back to life and then wreak havoc on the land.
Bring back the real, the Santa realness.
So what I love about this film is just this crazy mythology that it creates, because according to the film, the Santa Claus, the reason that we have a Santa Claus who can be everywhere on Earth simultaneously is because that's not the real Santa Claus. The real Santa Claus is this horned demon. And the elves, these demented elves, are actually the Santa Clauses that go around the world delivering gifts and kidnapping children. It's basically what they do. The naughty children.
Makes sense.
So this young boy in Lapland, it's his job. He decides, I have to stop this thing from happening. All the children in his community have been kidnapped because they've all been naughty by these horribly demented Santa elves. And then, yeah, major hijinks ensue. It gets really crazy. It becomes a little bit of an action film with the kid trying to combat these guys. They also live on a reindeer farm, as I mentioned, so he gets the idea to herd them into a reindeer pen. And very insane. It's a little like A Christmas Story meets Gremlins meets The Thing, if you've seen The Thing.
Right.
Something encased in ice, some sort of monster. But it's a really surprisingly sweet story about this father and a son. The mother is dead, so it's just the two of them working it out. The father doesn't really respect the son because he doesn't feel like the son is really a boy's boy, because the kid is really into reading and he's kind of withdrawn. And the kid ends up proving himself to the dad when he sort of takes charge of the situation. Mm-hmm. But it's also just hilarious and weird and bizarre, and I love it.
So it has some traditional elements hidden in there, but
yes,
mostly offbeat, crazy.
Yeah, it's a great balance. They were clearly trying to make an actual Christmas film that actually fulfilled expectations of a Christmas film, a little heartwarming action going on, but clearly coming at it from an entirely different perspective. And it's clear this would never be an American film because the tone is just so off.
Right.
And it's about 12 different genres at once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's...
Those fins.
Those crazy fins.
But still in tune enough to know to reference Ralphie.
Exactly.
Right? So that's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm really looking forward to watching this one.
Yes, and I would highly recommend. The film was based on a series of short films that I believe you can see on YouTube now, that the director made in 2007, I believe, in 2005, about this group of Santa hunters called the Rare Exports Team. And their job is to hunt feral wild Santas.
That idea is just crazy in and of itself.
I kind of love it.
It's a good basis.
It's great. And they tame them. So that they're not quite so feral, not quite so bitey and stabby and smashing with hammersy. And then they export these newly tamed Santas around the world for countries that want to have a nice Santa Claus in their country.
So the other countries get the tamed down,
that's right,
watered down version Santa.
Exactly.
Not the legit hardcore, I'm going to kill you with this axe.
Exactly.
Okay.
So while promoting capitalism and materialism.
Promoting all, exactly, exactly. Yeah, the Coca-Cola Santa Claus. So the implication is the Santa Claus that we have here in the U.S. is one of these
subtext
tamed
feral
Santas. Again, and we're all just waiting for the giant horned monster to come back.
Watch out for those mall Santas. They might revert to their old ways.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, it's amazing. And I also wanted to give a shout out to the film Krampus, which came out in 2014, which is a good, kind of a straight-up Christmas horror film with a little humor in it, but about the Krampus terrorizing an American family who no longer believe in Christmas. But boy, do they believe in Christmas by the end of this movie. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. But I love the idea of the real ancient Santa Claus, the kind of punishing Santa Claus who teaches morality.
Right.
Which is a far, far, far cry from what we're used to today,
right,
in terms of Santa Claus, the sanitized version.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I think a number of films have attempted to look at this, not typically from the U.S., because we're very invested in a certain, I think, version
sure
of Santa Claus.
Well, and any more offbeat isn't the way U.S. films go. They
right
want a sanitized version and, again, money to be made off of it. Which is
correct
not to say the Finnish film, they weren't thinking about a bottom line, but...
Right. It did not start a franchise frenzy, I would say, of Rare Exports feature films.
What happens so, next to the Santas?
So it's got a very specific audience.
There are other good horror Christmas films. I watched Black Christmas, which is about a sorority house where someone has snuck into the attic and is terrorizing these young sisters, these sorority sisters, and they find out the calls are coming. It's bad calls, and it's the original, as we talked about, the original. The calls are coming from him within the house. Get out of the house. It's really good. It's funny and offbeat a little bit, but it's also really scary. The phone calls are, they get under your skin.
Very disturbing. Yes.
Yeah, it's disturbing. And Gremlins is also really of the horror genre.
Classic.
Despite how cute Gizmo the Mogwai is, it borrows all the tropes of a horror film and classic horror.
It does.
Yes.
Gremlins are creepy.
Yeah, and it's a Christmas film. It all happens around Christmas.
Yeah, and as we mentioned off mic, my favorite part of that film is the story that Phoebe Cates tells in the movie about what happened to her family on Christmas when her father enjoyed dressing up as Santa Claus and surprising the family, gets stuck in the chimney, dies because they don't know he's in there.
Perpetuating the idea of Santa. your father dies. I mean,
yes. That's pretty dark concept for what was ostensibly promoted as a children's film.
Yeah.
For sure.
Oh, it was. Well, and it and she says, and that's how I learned there was no Santa Claus. It's really...
Lesson learned.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, it's funny, if you watch Gremlins 2, which I did as well, she starts... Gremlins 2 makes a lot of fun of itself and of the Gremlins idea.
Right.
And so she starts talking about, I forget, some offbeat holiday. This is when the President's Day thing happened to me and why I hate President's Day or Armistice Day, or I don't even remember what it was, but it's funny. And it's the Gremlins 2, not a great movie at all, but it does make fun of itself a lot. It makes fun of the whole idea of what do you mean you can't feed it after midnight? So when can you feed it then after at some point,
right.
You have to feed
the
them
gremlins
still.
Gremlins were much less scary then.
Yeah, and they were more fun. And it's not a horror film.
Not a horror film, yeah. And I also just want to give a shout out to this another film that I watch every year called Christmas Evil, which is a 1980 horror film, which John Waters has famously promoted over and over again every year as the ultimate Christmas film. So that should tell you something about the tone of the movie, for sure. But it's basically just about this crazy guy that dresses up like Santa Claus and starts making his own naughty and nice list in his neighborhood and starts doling out punishments. And occasionally giving out something nice, too, but pretty much mostly
murdering
gifts to the naughty, which is not great.
I haven't seen it. I look forward to that.
It's
that's interesting.
List.
Yeah, it's on my list now.
It's sort of like if Taxi Driver had been set during Christmas season.
Wow.
And Travis Bickle was a Santa Claus rather than a taxi driver.
That's quite a comparison.
That's how I'm going to pitch that. So that's just one sort of extreme oddball Christmas film. But so, Rusty, you had a film that you like, which I think is very different from these films we've been talking about.
Mine's a family kind of feel-good movie. Danny Boyle's only non-rated R feature film, which is Millions, from the year 2004. Danny Boyle, obviously the director of Trainspotting, Slumdog Millionaire, lots of adult films. And, you know, this is a really great, it isn't about Christmas. Most of it happens around the Christmas season. It's about two boys, Damien and Anthony, and they have lost their mother, and their dad's trying to start anew, and so they move out to the suburbs, and they start a new school, and the younger boy is who the movie really revolves around, Damien. He has a really powerful imagination, and he's constantly imagining these saints coming to visit him. He knows the history of all the saints, which makes him a little bit of an oddball. His brother even tells him, quit talking about saints in school. You're not going to make any friends that way. You know, like, don't do that. And so it follows him and his attempts to just deal with his mother's passing. He's always asking the saints, have you seen Saint, I forget what his mom's name is, but have you seen my mom? Mm. You know, and they're like, no, we haven't. So what happens, though, is he's out in his imaginary house, and he and his brother have learned that by playing on the sympathy of others saying, my mom is dead, they will give these boys things. All the shopkeepers give them things because their mom's dead, and so they use that. And so he decides he's going to ask God for money to help everyone. And all at once, a huge, enormous bag of money comes pounding down and destroys his cardboard house. And it's filled with English pounds. And in this film, the euro is coming to England, and so all of your British pounds have to be spent or converted by the end of the year, or you will just lose them. They'll become worth nothing. And so he's kind of decides he's going to do good with the money, and he starts giving it away because that's just – he's just a really you know, he's a really thoughtful, very morally conscious little boy. And he decides he gives money to the Mormons because he hears they're missionaries. And so there are three young Mormons in the neighborhood, and they all at once get, I think, 10,000 pounds. And you see the Mormons then on their bikes carrying their new TV and new microwave. And it's a pretty funny moment. The movie's filled with lots of really great comedy and really touching scenes, too. Even though it deals with his imagination a lot, and these saints come to visit him and they're imaginary, it really is grounded in real feelings and really thoughtfulness. It's a great Danny Boyle film, and it's got his editing style, I think. I think it's not a typical Danny Boyle movie, but it's got elements of his style, to be sure. And so it turns in, just like in any movie in real life, if you find a bag of money, that bag of money is not free. It is not yours right. all at once, yes. really.
There are consequences.
Somebody's going to come and yes. find it. It might be, you know, that bad man from No Country for Old Men. In this case, there are two robbers who figure out, one robber figures out that the boy has the money, and it's from a robbery, and they were pitching the money off the train at selected points where people would be there to grab it. And it just so happened the boy was there and grabbed the money. And so it turns into a chase, and they have to get rid of the money and turn it over before the end of the year. And so it's really sweet. The father finds out about it because he gives the money away at school. He gives like £1,000 away at school, and the school for charity. And the school's like, why would you have £1,000? That's
right.
That's crazy. And so it's really sweet. And he keeps getting these visitations from all these saints. And I'm not a particularly religious person, but it's got a really sweet moralistic theme about it. And it's really rooted in Catholicism. I recommend it for the holidays. It's a great kids movie, great adult movie. There's not many people who won't enjoy it. I guess if your kids are too small, there's a scene where the boys are looking at women in bras and talking about their breasts.
Yes.
And so if your child's 6 or 7 or something, that might be a bit much for them. But certainly a 9 or 10-year-old would probably love Millions. It's a really sweet film, and it's got some great messages in it. It's one of my favorite offbeat Christmas.
Yeah,
you don't think of it for Christmas, but...
No, and it is really great. And I think it was overlooked, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that it was Danny Boyle, and people had certain expectations at that time about what a Danny Boyle film was, Trainspotting and 20 Days Later, et cetera. But hopefully it'll be rediscovered.
Yeah, it didn't make a lot of money, especially in America. I don't find that most Americans have seen it. It's a pretty British film, obviously, and so I don't know, but it really deserves a wider audience, especially around Christmas time. It's a great family film. Your grandma will enjoy it. Everybody will enjoy it. I don't think there are many people who wouldn't enjoy the film Millions. I think it's rated PG. It could have been rated G very easily.
Yeah, I think it might be PG.
Yeah, I think it is.
Maybe for all the bra talk.
The bra talk, you know? Indeed.
It's an instant PG. Yeah, that's a great one, and I think that's a definite undervalued Christmas film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So speaking of undervalued Christmas films, Heather, I know that you're very fond of a film that I think a lot of people maybe haven't seen or don't think of as a Christmas film.
Well, the movie I'm talking about is Ice Harvest, and it was from 2005. And, I mean, it does revolve around Christmas time, so it's not a traditional, like, about Santa or religious-themed movie. It's really definitely the definition of an offbeat an offbeat Christmas movie. It has John Cusack starring, Oliver Platt, and it's set in Wichita, Kansas, which I've never been, but the picture that it gives you of Wichita, Kansas is not nice.
Fairly bleak.
Yes, very bleak. And the cinematography is very dark and blue and cold. You definitely feel cold and dirty and they're all drunk through the whole movie. So it's very, it's one of those feelings. And so John Cusack plays a mob lawyer, and he comes up with a scheme with one of his friends, played by Billy Bob Thornton, which, you know, I'm not sure they were really even friends. I think it was just a business deal. Mm-hmm. And they come up with a scheme to steal money from the lead mob guy, who is strangely played by Randy Quaid. And you don't find that out till the end, but I think it was one of Randy Quaid's last movies before he kind of went off the rails.
He fled the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, John Cusack's character is not a good guy. He is a mob lawyer. He neglects his children. He's divorced. And, you know, he doesn't really seem to have any sort of aim in his life. And he's kind of stuck in Wichita Falls. So there's this quote that runs throughout the movie. And the quote is, "As Wichita Falls, so Wichita Falls." And so it's throughout the movie, and you don't realize I won't give away the ending, but it comes back to that quote in the end. But anyway, so yeah, nobody wants to be in Wichita Falls, it looks like, and everyone's drunk or inside because it's freezing. And so there's that, and then there's the relationship with him and his ex-wife's husband, who is played by Oliver Platt, who right. by far, if you have any knowledge of Oliver Platt's roles, you know he's going to be good, and he's the funniest drunk guy.
Yeah.
In this movie.
He does play good drunk.
And,
yes.
And a drunk guy who hates being married to this woman who just so happened to be John Cusack's character's ex-wife. And he's probably the highlight of the movie.
I think.
Yeah. And there's, you know, of course, a female interest. Her name is Connie Nielsen. She's been in a lot of TV shows. And she plays kind of like a harlot, kind of like the woman who lures the man into doing bad things for her because she's beautiful and she romances him in a way, and you find out she ends up manipulating a lot of men, and she kind of is the one that gets the ball rolling in this whole story. And John Cusack, like, she becomes the woman that he's fascinated with and the only thing that kind of keeps him going, and he's making all these horrible decisions. They steal the money. One of the mob guys, enforcers, goes looking for them. He becomes a key in the movie where Billy Bob Thornton kidnaps him. You know, he tricks him into, you know, Billy Bob Thornton kills his own wife. It's crazy mayhem.
And there's
Billy
a Bob, lot of weird scenes.
Billy Bob is insane in this movie, I should just point out. And he certainly has a history of crazy Christmas films with the Bad Santa films and this perfectly cast.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a bad toupee going on.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he off the rails. Like, I don't think it was necessarily a break in character, but there's a part where he's beating a trunk that has one of the guys in it that he's kidnapping and with a golf club. And you kind of see John Cusack off in the corner, like, just like looking like, what is he doing? Like, let's just let him finish doing it and move on with the scene.
Billy Bob's going method again.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. A little too deep into character because he kills his own wife cold-heartedly and he has no morals. And in the end, you know, this kind of struggle between Billy Bob Thornton and John Cusack about who is going to hold the money. Do they trust each other? Of course they don't trust each other. They're, you know, they're stealing money. They basically are two men in their lives who don't give a crap about anyone. And they just want this money and run the hell out of Wichita.
Yeah,
and
so, it's got a nihilism about it, for sure.
And so the underlying vibe of it is because it all takes place in Christmas. At one point, they go to the family's, John Cusack's ex-wife's family house with drunk Oliver Platt. Mm. And they make a huge scene in it. It's one of the funniest scenes in the movie. But it's also sad because you see John Cusack and his children who don't want to be with him.
Yeah.
Because he's neglectful and not a crappy dad. And so, so it's you could definitely have the holiday feel, but it's very bad. Like, I mean, it appeals to the darkness in me.
The dysfunctional family Christmas.
You know, telling a relative off, you know, the father-in-law criticizes Oliver Platt, but Oliver Platt says, well, who pays for everything that you have, basically. And so, it's very blatantly dysfunctional. And I find that really amusing.
Yes.
And honest, you know, and I think all of us kind of at some point want to be that honest at a family occasion, but you know you can't because it would just ruin it for everyone. So the movie kind of fulfills that in a way of telling off your in-laws.
Yeah, and it's got a lot of great dialogue, I should point out.
It does.
The screenplay was written by Richard Russo, the famous author. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a literate screenplay.
Yeah, it was based on a book. By Scott Phillips, and then Richard Russo took it and made it into a movie, and I'm sure made his magic happen.
And Harold Ramis directed it.
Yes, and Harold Ramis.
It's kind of one of the underrated Harold Ramis films, because you always think of, you know, the other big films, Groundhog Day, and those kind of films.
Yeah,
he's done,
sure.
You can tell if you really step back and you look at Harold Ramis' list of movies, you can kind of tell it's a Harold Ramis movie.
Yeah.
And you know, John Cusack's not doing anything particularly different than he usually does. He's probably playing more of an unlikable character than normal.
Yeah.
But and he does it well. I mean, at this one point where Randy Quaid's character is trying to, you know, attack John Cusack for stealing his money and et cetera, and he stabs him in the foot with his knife. And so John Cusack's just laying on the floor while he's attacking Connie Nielsen's character, Renata. And you want him to get up and help her, but he can't because he can't take the knife out of his foot. And I'm just like, come on, don't be a wimp. Get the knife out of your foot. But it's kind of how John Cusack's character is in the whole movie. It would have been out of character had he saved the day, like in a big way.
Yeah.
That's a great reaction to have to a Christmas film. Get the knife out of the foot.
Yeah. That's, right, exactly.
Yeah, that kind of
right.
summarizes it. Yeah.
Right. And,
yeah.
You know, so it's very appeals to the darkness in me. Like, on half of me likes Christmas, likes family. The other half of me, like, wants to go to Hawaii at Christmas and not even think about Christmas.
Right. Where's Krampus when you need him?
Right. And so it's, yeah. And I will say that I think one of the best things about the movie is just the feel. You really feel the coldness, the starkness of why in the hell would you live in Wichita Falls? Sorry, whoever, if you're listening from Wichita Falls. But in the wintertime, it feels like you would never want to be there. And
I
appreciate that in a Christmas movie, because that's kind of like classic Christmas flipped on its side. And so, like, you know.
Right. It reminded me a little bit of Fargo, the Coen Brothers movie, just in terms of the way they captured that.
Yeah.
Kind of bleak, snowy, kind of desperate landscape.
When, like, who wants to be here? Like, well, it's the idea of escaping your average. I mean, even if, you know, we have lovely winters here in Tucson, but you still are, you know, the idea of being stuck in that same place, whether you're in Wichita or here, is kind of a common theme for most everyone. So, unless you're a world traveler. But, yeah, I think it's a fun movie to watch. It's not, like I said, it's not your average, and it's a good laugh. There's some funny moments, and so if you're looking for something, and you know, to watch with adults, it's a good one.
Yeah, super easy to watch. Yeah. I found it really easy to watch, and you get into that feel of Wichita Falls and how cold it is. You feel cold watching the movie.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's this theme where, you know, they're basically drunk the whole movie. And he keeps on getting drunk. He might get a little sober, but John Cusack continues to get drunk. And he's running into this officer, this cop, who continually, the same cop, runs into him periodically. And it's like a theme, like, this town is so small that he continually runs into him. And the cop doesn't arrest him. So it's a very, you know, little things like that.
Well, I think that's important with Christmas films. I think you need to laugh. You need to feel, because Christmas is stressful, let's face it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So it seems like the common theme in what we're talking about are films that are a little funny and kind of uplifting in some way, even if it's in a dark way.
Yes, I agree. Because honestly, in the end, you're thinking, well, that was a pretty good story, and I'm really glad I don't live there. So, and then I've not made those horrible decisions. Like, it comes back to the bag of money, like in Millions, like, you know, you're going to have some consequences for finding that bag of money or stealing that bag of money. And so that kind of, like, at least I don't have it that bad, kind of, too.
That's right.
You know.
Well, one of my favorite funny ones based around Christmas is Life of Brian, the Monty Python movie Life of Brian. My wife and I always watch that for Christmas.
Yes.
And that's, you know, if you haven't seen it, that's crazy. Yeah. But it's about the guy who was born in the manger next to Jesus, and his name was Brian.
Oh, yes. We don't know a lot about him.
No, history doesn't tell us much
about
Brian.
That's the sunny
side
of life? Always look on the
always,
sunny side?
Yeah, always look on the bright side of life, indeed. It's great.
That's a great one, yeah.
I also like The Apartment. Not funny, necessarily. It's got moments. Mm-hmm. That's a Billy Wilder film with Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine, and it starts with a Christmas party, and it's really a sweet, sweet movie. It's one of my all-time favorites, and
it is. Yep.
Not a traditional Christmas film, but, gee, if you watch that for Christmas, it's going to be great. Not for kids. It's really, it's one for adults to watch, and it's not going to make you laugh a ton, but it'll make you think,
it's
just a great, great film.
Oh, yeah. Almost no one was better at that point than Jack Lemmon. I just think
I agree.
That's classic Jack Lemmon.
The best, yeah. And I would just throw out a suggestion of The Thin Man, the original Thin Man, the William Powell and Myrna Loy film. It's not seen as a Christmas film, but it's this married pair of detectives solving crimes and getting blasted. It's from the 1930s, and they just drink constantly.
Nice.
Which is great. And they have this great terrier dog who's always getting into trouble with them. They're trying to solve a crime on Christmas Eve in this penthouse apartment while they're throwing a Christmas party. They're drunkenly shooting out the ornaments on the tree with a gun.
I put it on my list just by that description
to watch. It's great. It's kind of from that era of 30s screwball comedy, sophisticated but really drunk kinds of classic Hollywood filmmaking. It's just great. And it's not seen as a Christmas film, but it is set on Christmas, yeah.
And that's what we're looking for here.
Yeah. So I think we've stuffed everyone's stocking with a lot of suggestions.
Yes.
That way you're not just watching the offbeat Die Hard for Christmas.
Yes. Which is always good, but
which is a great Christmas film.
There are
Christmas
more
film.
Things to watch.
Yes. Yeah.
And so we've given you a bunch here.
Yeah. So that's our gift to you. To everyone.
Dear listeners.
This year, dear listeners. So have yourself a very offbeat Christmas, please. Well, thanks, Rusty and Heather.
Sure.
Thanks, Jeff.
That was great. I just wanted to point out that you can listen to us on iTunes. You can check out our website.
Stitcher as well.
Stitcher.
Yeah.
Stitcher.
And we're on Stitcher now at 2.
Fantastic. Sign someone up for Christmas. That would be a great gift.
Yeah. Tell your friends. That's right.
So this leads me to rule number 341 of the many, many rules of Film Club, which is they don't really make actresses like they used to, especially in the 1950s. And that's going to be our topic next time here on the Many Rules of Film Club. It's leading ladies of the 1950s. So we'll see you then, and thanks for listening.